You know what? I've found an interesting book here. The Great Pyramid is its title. By Tom Valentine. I read it through today. It's got some interesting stuff in it. I've been talking about the Great Pyramid a lot. The pyramid inch, the solar year, the shape of the globe. By the way, I think I said 26 million years the other night for the great year. Uncorrected, I don't know why I said millions. 26,000 years is the great year. Breaks down into sections. It's from that great year with its sections that make us and makes you hear now that we're entering into the age of Aquarius. The year is broken into several ages. It's 26,000. Just pin that on in case I may be wrong, but some scratch in my memory says I said 26 million. And if I did, I meant 26,000. Within the Great Pyramid's interior system, assuming the pyramid inch representing 1 year, 365 days and a quarter. Within the Great Pyramid's interior system, there's not a single straight line covering a length of 6,000 pyramid inches. Not a one. But if you follow the descending passage we've talked about and the ascending passage to a certain point that the prophetic interpreters have come to, an inch year scale comes out to 6,000 pyramid inches in that pattern that the Egyptian Book of the Dead, though that's heathen insight from earlier revelation, clearly describes as the ascent of man to his destiny. There are 6,000 pyramid inches, not a hair off. Now, the fundamentalists have always assumed 4,000 B.C. as the beginning of history, as the Bible knows it, from the creation of Adam. 4,000 B.C. will not quite do it. Now, Dr. Davidson, who probably more than anyone else did the thorough study that laid the foundation for all prophetic interpreters, and don't categorize me, I haven't said I'm one, I'm just leading us down the path so we can make a decision about it. He found his benchmark at the only time in 26,000 years that the star designated as Alpha Draconis is lined up with Alcyone in the constellation Pleiades. These scorings in the descending passage and the lineup of the descending passage, just one time in 26,000 years are those stars lined up that way, which is the benchmark that if I can get into the pyramid this week, I'm going to show you how he derived that. But all at this point I want you to get is that one time in 26,000 years, projecting backwards or forwards on the rate of movement in the heavens, these two stars line up. That's the benchmark for dating the pyramid. That's midnight. September. Autumnal equinox. 2144 B.C. taking that as your date, you can move back to the beginning point of history on the pyramid inch scale, backwards and forwards, because that line fixes the date of the building of the pyramid. As the timeline moves along, it will come to a specific date, floor level, at the entrance of the Queen's Chamber. Now, if you haven't been listening, you're going to be lost on this. But you that have watched know this pyramid has a descending passage. It goes down to a pit that's really down like this. And at a certain point, it turns upward. And at a certain point, there goes the Queen's Chamber across. And it drops to a certain level that comes across that's tabulated with the levels of the stones that go up that we've already talked about. At that precise point in time, on a pyramid inch, you come to a day and a month and a year. Again, I'm being deliberately vague because all I want to do is bait you a little tonight. You come to a specific line, which is that line that is the base level of the Queen's Chamber as it's projected out to the ascending passage, assuming that's a prophetic picture of the ascent of man. And you can mark off the date of the birth of Moses. You can mark off the date of the Exodus. But at this point, where the intersection with that floor base of the Queen's Chamber, not the King's Chamber, and the ascending line, calculated from the beginning date and the benchmark of 2144 BC, you come without chipping a stone to make it come out. You're talking about inches that are measured by half a human hair. You come exactly, figuring one pyramid inch to be 365 and a quarter days. You come exactly to October 4 B.C. Now what happened on October 4 B.C.? Now you thought I was going to stop right there and dangle you. You'll be ashamed of yourself. What happened October 4th, 4 B.C.? Now that isn't a date that you normally think about. Christ was born. I said, wait a minute, I thought Christmas. How many of you remember when we were dealing with the Christmas traditions, Christ was born in the fall? You can date that by a complicated analysis of the assignments of the priests that come out of Chronicles and the statement that tells what the service assignment of the father of John the Baptist was, and the clear understanding of the relationship between the birth of John the Baptist and when Jesus was to be born, and you find the fall. The pyramid says, if these dates are correct, he was born October 4th, 4 B.C., Now, most people think he was not only born at Christmas, but that he was born at 0 A.D. Isn't that the standard average man's attitude? Actually, this is what I was reading this for. Here's where I'm going to bait you. Actually, when Dionysius Exiguus was calculating the Gregorian calendar, which we use today, he figured that the birth of Christ took place in the 28th year of the reign of Augustus Caesar. So he worked his calendar based on that. However, he overlooked the fact that Augustus Caesar had ruled Rome for 4 years under his true name, Octavian. Therefore, Dionysius made a 4-year mistake. Instead of being born in 0 AD, he was born in 4 BC. Now, that doesn't prove he was born October 4th, but you can prove from the Bible he was born in the fall. And if the pyramidologists are correct, now some people call them pyramid idiots. Pyramidiots, that's it. Pyramidiots, that's the word some have coined. You don't know where I stand. You don't even know if I've decided on the Lost Tribes yet. Don't you say you do? Well, isn't it interesting that the pyramid would date the birth October 4th, 4 BC? Now, if this wasn't intentional, the most amazing coincidence of all is that from this point, which I've vaguely put here, see, the blocks of the pyramid are courses, and on a certain course, as you turn off into the Queen's Chamber, then it goes on up and across into the King's Chamber, it drops so many inches to a base level that marks precisely that point, October 4 B.C. Now, if that was the birth of Christ, and that's what the pyramid is pointing out, because the pyramid only points out something happens on that date so significant the whole world is shaken. That's all you can find from the pyramidology. What is amazing is that 33, exactly, 33 and a half, without chipping a stone, without shaving anything, because we're talking about inches that are the British inch plus a half a hair. The same inches by which the diameter of the world, the circumference of the globe, the elongation of the poles, when even Newton thought it was the other way around, the plotting of the galaxies in the great year of 26,000, that's a rough figure, 25,000 something, the discovery of pi, then in the midst of all that, this event, starting from the very date of creation and going 6,000 inches, you come just a little under 4,000 of those inches to an exact date, October 4 BC, and you take these inches, they represent a British inch plus a half a hair, and go 33 of them exactly. Exactly. 33 and a half inches. And you know what happens? Huh? You know what happens? What? No, no, you're telling me history. I'm telling you, you know what happens in the pyramid? Don't give me that stuff. You know, the pyramid goes, got a couple of plugs right here. I mean, three of them, real plugs. They have air about to dig around. This is very narrow. You're aware of that, aren't you? All of a sudden, it opens up into a 28-foot-high hall that the Book of the Dead called the Hall of Light and Truth. Isn't it interesting? I'm asking you, you know what happened in the pyramid 33 and a half inches from that date, October 4 BC? You know what happens?
Just so you that made a bet, I dangle it, will lose. I'm going to tell you. The narrow hall of truth in darkness, which to the prophetic analyzers is the period of the law, truth in darkness. Get in here close. This literally is called in the Egyptian Book of the Dead the Hall of Truth and Darkness. Then get it close up. There you go. Come on. Here we go. Can you focus better? And that's better. I got to get these pictures made by our artist, giant size. I'm going to send this home with him tomorrow. Well, here, you, there, that's good, right there. Hold it. Can you focus it there? Now move there. That's good enough. Stop it. Now this is the descending passage going all the way down to the pit. Here's the turnaround point. Now these scorings on these specialty markings lining up the constellation in juxtaposition to the Alpha Draconis star serving as the north star at that point, or the pole star, perfectly aligned, give you the date. 2144 BC is the benchmark, which then can push down to the beginning of time, the creation of man. You turn and start the hall of ascent. The Exodus is marked. God reveals himself, truth in darkness encased in law. You come to a point, October 4 BC. You go 33 and a half years, and boom, it breaks out into this high vaulted gallery called the Hall of Truth and Light. Man is descending until God intervenes and reveals through his oracles a turnaround of truth called truth in darkness, because encased in law. But at a given point on a 6,000 pyramid inch perfectly measured, use optical tools, it'll come out at exactly 33 and a half inches past October 4 BC, this gallery, grand gallery, opens up into truth and light. Now, isn't it an interesting coincidence that if they're right and Christ was born October 4 BC, 33 and one half inches, pyramid inches, further up, the great gallery opens up in truth and light. Are you following that? That means that the exact date of Christ's crucifixion opens the light and opens the truth to whosoever will. Seven being the perfect number, four times seven is 28, four being covering the whole earth, at exactly 33 and a half inches from that date. Now, the only problem that people had for years with this is they said the pyramid has to be off, because the 33 and a half inches bring them not to Friday, when he's supposed to have been crucified, but to an earlier day in the week. Now, isn't it interesting that when we got to Easter traditions, we found that Friday wasn't the date of his crucifixion either? You see how Satan has fought the truth? But encased in stone and mathematics, either the pyramidites or the pyramidologists
have found one of the most amazing coincidences, that by their projections, Jesus was born October 4, B.C. 4, and Christ was crucified April 6th, A.D. 30. Well, since everybody knows Christ was crucified on Good Friday, and April 6th, A.D. 30 was an earlier day in the week, go check your calendars. Pure men must be wrong. But further research shows he wasn't crucified on Friday. He wasn't born in Christmas. And it was 4 B.C. rather than 0 A.D. Interesting, isn't it? In 1973, a professor from the University of Tennessee used a computer and worked moon cycles back in time to determine that the crucifixion actually took place on blank, 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 A.D. 30. Now, this pyramid brings you to August 20th, 1953. And says, by an amazing event in the inch per year cycle, that something earth-shaking is supposed to happen August 20th, 1953. Well, it's got a pretty good record because it precisely marked a point of conflict in world history that was to begin August 5th, 1914, and continue until November 11th, 1918. Well, it didn't do too bad since the World War fit right in those dates. So what in the world could have happened on August 20th, 1953? You want to know? Well, you ain't got enough tonight. You ain't going to get that yet. Just for fun, I'm going to read something. Just change your mind for a minute, okay? We're just going to have to handle them under our arm, go ahead and do other things. I've been reading this decision, by the way. It gets better as it goes. The Great Pyramid, the largest, if not the oldest, one of the oldest buildings in the world, must be seen in order that its immensity may be realized. Covering an area of nearly 13.5 acres, it rises to a height of 454 feet and contains nearly 90 million cubic feet of masonry, weighing well over 5 million tons. You know how much weight that is? 90 million cubic feet of masonry weighing well over 5 million tons. Let us suppose the stone comprised in this structure were loaded into 10-ton trucks filled to capacity. Got that? 10-ton trucks filled to capacity. Such a line of trucks placed bumper to bumper would stretch over 1,000 miles, bumper to bumper. That's almost from North to South California. I mean, North border to South. To illustrate it another way, there's material enough in the Great Pyramid to build a wall 2 yards thick, 25 feet high, from Birmingham to London, England. But not merely the size of the pyramid and the fact that it's such an enigma to mathematicians and engineers and others. How was it built? When? By whom? And for what purpose? Constructed of huge granite and limestone blocks, Some of them weighing over 50 tons each, of which the limestone came from the Mokattam Hills, about 12 miles distant, and the granite some 500 miles or more to the south. How were such masses of stone transported, raised, and placed in position? The Greek historian Herodotus, writing in the 5th century B.C., states that when visiting Egypt, the priest told him the Great Pyramid took 30 years to build. 10 years were spent mainly in preparatory work on the subterranean chambers and the rock upon which the Great Pyramid stands, and the causeway for bringing the stone from the Nile to the site, and 20 years in the construction of the pyramid itself. He states that throughout this period, 100,000 men were continuously employed, working in 3-month shifts. Hearsay. That's all that is, hearsay. Who was the architect? Who were the builders? The only thing that everybody agrees on, they were not Egyptians. Though there are contradictions evident in the ancient writings, they were not Egyptians. Herodotus speaks of them as a race of shepherds, and that it was during Cheops' reign, an Egyptian king of the 4th dynasty, the Great Pyramid was built. Now you say, well, Scott, I thought that the shepherd kings were Jacob and his sons. Only if the timelines that the majority agree upon for the dates for the shepherd kings is that true. The timelines that most archaeologists agree upon for shepherd kings now, the Hyksos, coincides with the time that Jacob's sons, subsequent to Joseph's power, were in Egypt. If that timeline is correct, they were the shepherd kings. We know they were shepherds, and we know they ruled. Well, what if, as Herodotus says, there were shepherd kings in Cheops' time? Now we've got two sets of shepherd kings. Could it be? Well, if they all descend from Shem, yeah, they're the same people. Just a second wave of them. Now, Herodotus says there were earlier shepherd kings at the time the Great Pyramid was built, and they built it. Moreover, a certain Philidian who fed his flocks near the spot where the Great Pyramid stands is referred to in connection with the understanding. Manetho, an Egyptian high priest who lived about 300 B.C., says, there came up from the east men of ignoble race who had the confidence to invade our country and easily subdued it by their power without a battle. Which one is he talking about? Anybody want to try to prove it? Jacob and his sons? Or somebody earlier? He's writing 300 B.C. He's not sure. During the period of their occupation, temples of the Egyptians were closed, their religion suppressed, and their land reduced to a state of slavery. So hated were they that Egyptians were unwilling to refer to them even by name. From Bible records, this hatred appears to have survived for a very long time, for it stated that even in the days of Joseph, every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. Genesis 46:34. Well, Joseph and his family could have created that resentment. Or it could have been somebody earlier. Manetho also adds, and it is a point of great interest, that when this shepherd race at last withdrew from Egypt, they went to Palestine and there built Jerusalem. A cartouche of Cheops or Khufu, Grecianized Chapo or Suthis, has been found as a quarry mark on a stone recovered from among debris accumulated near the entrance of the Great Pyramid. Also at an ironworks over in the area that the true Sinai is. Cheops was the king of the 4th Egyptian dynasty, his reign being variously dated by authorities as between 2150 and 2800 B.C. That is 300 to 400 years on either side of the flood. Real accurate and precise. It has been suggested that the builder of the Great Pyramid was Melchizedek, because he lived at the time of Cheops. King of Salem, Jerusalem, to whom Abram gave tithes of all that he possessed. Now, if that were true, I could take you to other traditions that say Shem came down into Egypt. Killed both Ham and later Nimrod because of their evil ways. Turned the Egyptians from their heathen worship borrowed from Babylon and restored them to a faith in the true God. Was the first of the shepherd kings from whom his later descendants, because from Shem comes Abram, from Abram comes Abram, from Abram comes Jacob, and from Jacob comes the second bunch of shepherd kings. Just thinking. Is that possible? I mean, it's a possibility. Right? Shem left Egypt, went back and built Jerusalem. He is traditionally associated with Melchizedek. And all we have is another name given to him. Now, maybe Shem built it with plans brought by Noah, who blessed Shem and gave it to him from the architect Enoch. We really ought to try to figure out who it was. Enoch? Shem? The late David Davison drew attention to the remarkable way the age or dynasty of Enoch is impressed upon the Great Pyramid. As Enoch lived 365 years, or to be more exact, 365,242 days. As Enoch lived 365 years, so 365, or to be more exact, 365.242 days, the value of the solar year, forms the basis of all the pyramid's measurements. That is kind of interesting, isn't it? That Enoch's exact 365-year lifespan is the characteristic measurement mark of the pyramid. But he could have been the architect and that would have happened. As you well know, the Egyptian Book of the Dead refers to the pyramid as the Pillar of Enoch. Enoch was in the line of Seth, and Josephus, the Jewish historian, ascribes the building of the pyramid to the dynasty of Seth. Well, Enoch was part of that. Well, so was Ham, so was Shem.
Now, if God revealed the plan of the tabernacle to Moses, gave instructions for building the temple to David, and the temple of the millennium to Ezekiel, could he not also have revealed the design and measurements of the great pyramid to the one chosen by him to superintend its erection? All I'm asking, couldn't he? Huh? Sure he could. In fact, could he not have inspired and guided everybody concerned in the task? Here's what Josephus said, the Jewish historian. Seth, himself of an excellent character, did leave children behind him who imitated his virtues. They were the inventors of the peculiar sort of wisdom which is concerned with the heavenly bodies and their order. And that their inventions might not be lost before they were sufficiently known upon Adam's prediction that the world was to be destroyed at one time by a force of fire. Where did he get that? And at another time by the violence and quantity of water. They made two pillars, the descendants of Seth. Enoch was a descendant of Seth. They made one of brick, the other of stone. And they inscribed their discoveries on them both. This is Josephus. About 39, 37 to 95 A.D., give or take a little. They made two pillars, one of brick and the other of stone. They inscribed their discoveries on them both, that in case the pillar of brick should be destroyed by the flood, the pillar of stone might remain and exhibit those discoveries to mankind. Josephus goes on to say, now this, the pillar of stone, remains in the land of Syriad to this day. Where's the land of Syriad? The land of Sirius. The Sirius worshiping land of Egypt, where Sirius was venerated as the star of Isis. So, no question about that, what I just told you. No question that that's the land he's talking about. Josephus says the pillar that the descendants of Seth created, based upon a prophecy by Adam that the world would be destroyed twice, by fire and by water. The descendants of Seth, according to Josephus, he's pretty close to the Hebrew tradition. The good old King James hadn't been written yet. Josephus says, the descendants of Seth, well, that includes Enoch, Noah, Ham, and Shem. Any one of those four. Or Methuselah. Five. They built two pillars, one of brick and one of stone. And the one of stone that was to survived the flood, according to Josephus, was in the land of Egypt in his day. Interesting to note, moreover, that the Egyptian Sothic year was fixed with the heliacal raising of the star Sirius, and that the Egyptian Sothic cycle of 1460 Sothic or 1461 solar equal 4 times 365 and a quarter years, which is equivalent to 4 times the life of Enoch. Their concepts dominated by this pyramid. Book of Isaiah, as we've shown you, Isaiah 19:19-20. In that day there shall be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. It shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. Now, not always are pillars places of sacrifice. Joshua erected pillars. They can be memorials, or in this case, is it a time capsule with a prophetic pattern of 6,000 years? What about location? Can it be said that the Great Pyramid stands both in the midst of and at the border of the land of Egypt? Well, there's a contradiction. How can a pillar stand at the midst of, in the midst of, and at the border? It's the land of Egypt. You draw the lines to the location. No, leave it back so you get perspective. At the location of the pyramid, it's at the border of lower and upper Egypt. And the pharaohs in Egypt wear different colored hats depending upon their rule over Thebes to the south and the upwaters of the Nile or lower Egypt. So it is at the border of upper and lower Egypt, in the midst of them both. Exactly. In 1868, Henry Mitchell, chief hydrographer to the United States Coast Survey, observing the regular convex curvature of the Nile Delta coastline, took a map, a pair of compasses, and tried various lengths and directions of radii till he had all the prominent coast points swept by his arc, when upon looking at what spot marked the center, he found it was the Great Pyramid. But on the border of the two. The pyramid has no headstone. You're aware of that, aren't you? You aware that it has no headstone? Are you aware also why it has no headstone? Answer me. You aren't. You're not aware it has no headstone? A displacement error was made. Located early in the units of the descending and ascending passages, so you can locate it. A displacement error was made 286 inches. What's 13 times 11? Quick. Come on. Times 2. 286. What's that? What's that mean? What's 286? You know what 286 is, don't you? Any of you ever read Bullinger's number in Scripture? I mean, he's no cultist. He's just a solid biblical numerologist, not the cultic numerologist. Like I keep saying, I'm not a British Israelite. I'm not. I'm not a cultic numerologist. I'm a biblical believer that when God says something, he means it, including the fact he speaks through numbers. What do you think 40 shows up so often? 4, the number of the whole world. 10, the number of human responsibility. 13 stands for rebellion, apostasy, and defection. In the modern world, it's been narrowed down to bad luck. It sure isn't luck. It's just rebellion, apostasy, defection. It's a bad, bad number. 11 stands for disorder and disintegration. Who is the witness to it? is such a little... When you think of the size of the pyramid, as I've just told you, the size of the pyramid, at 286 inches, how many feet's that? About 20-some feet, isn't it? How many feet is 286 inches? 23 feet, 10 inches. Just short of 24 feet. 12's the number of perfect government. 2 times 12 is 24, and it falls short of it. Such a little displacement. And the headstone won't fit. Okay, what are you trying to say? I'm not saying anything. I'm just giving you the facts. I'm telling you, and I'm going to tell you now what some other people say. As they go through that prophetic pattern, they can find the spot where a little shift off the architect plan makes the headstone not fit. Now, is that because the genius who built this so perfectly? Made that mistake? Or was a deliberate teaching mistake put in? And you know what? At the entrance, along the various passages, at the entrance of the blank, blank, which speaks of blank, blank, and at this blank, there is a 286-inch blank in the blank of the blank. Which tells you what has to be done to make the headstone fit. I think that's fascinating. Now, what if these guys are right? What if there is a 6,000-year prophetic pattern laid out in that pyramid? Now, you've heard me say 4004 B.C. and you started counting. But there's a four-year error in our calendars. The pyramid puts it right to 4000 B.C. and works backwards from it. Now, the key time, the key to the understanding the pyramid, if it is a prophetic plan laid out in these passages, if there is a prophetic plan, the descending passage, clear down to this pit, the miraculous turnaround in the ascending passages, and the increments marked off perfectly, and the grooves in the ceiling, and the grooves in the ceiling and in the floor at the exact spot, and the dates that you can line this up with the dragon star that was the pole star at the time, and also another lineup that's a blank blank right now. If these years portray the dates of the world, the 286-inch displacement is a dating moment. You find your date when that 286-inch correction occurs. You know something? 6 independent definitions of a system of astronomical chronology, in all of which the great step, you remember that great step? Figures, defines an epoch of reference at midnight ending January 25th, blank, blank. Just want you to know, I can fight those monkeys, but I still am not going to stop staying ahead of you. I brought something else to read tonight. The Irish Chronicles record the fact of the coming of an Eastern princess. In these chronicles appears an interesting poem purporting to set forth the facts as told of this princess. These are Irish Chronicles. Now, they said Homer was fiction. We were five that rode upon asses, and five were the mules they led. Whereon were the things brought forth from the house of God when we fled. Hey, this is out of Irish Chronicles. This is not Jewish. Whereon were the things brought forth from the house of God when we fled? The stone of Jacob, our father, the seat wherein Yahweh dwells, upon sacred things whereof the book of the prophets tells, and the signs of my father David, on whom was the promise stayed, bright as the crown of the dawn, deep as the midnight shade. Upon me was that promise fallen, for me was the prophet's toil. He had signed me with David's signet, anointed my head with oil. He had set my hands to the harp, he had bidden me hold the spear. The buckler was girt to my bosom, and Barak, and he drew near. To set my feet upon Bethel, the stone that is seen this day, that my seed may rest upon it where'er it is borne away. And its promises be sure beneath them, strong to uphold their throne. Though the builders cast it aside, it shall never be left alone. Irish Chronicles. That interests me. Are you tired of the Irish? You tired of the pyramid?